these nuts.
I decreased it for the live.
These nuts.
All right. I wish you had more modern meme expressions to use, but you don't know any of them because you don't use TikTok.
And JT
also doesn't use TikTok. And I'm sure every single listener is either that guy who thinks he's too good for TikTok or has a bunch of friends who think they're too good for TikTok. And there is an objectively good guy side in this sort of contrast and a bad guy side. And I think we all know which one it
and
is.
And on the other side?
The good side is definitely not one that uses these nuts in 2022, okay?
I used that yesterday.
Oh. I love it. I was just going to say, on the other side, they're employed people. So that's...
I've seen more bad TikToks than I have good TikToks. Yeah. So to me, it's a net negative to the world.
And you've seen what more good YouTube videos than you've seen bad YouTube videos.
I'm under no impressions that YouTube is a good thing. YouTube sucks. We're all terrible. Yeah, really.
It's a necessary evil at this point. Fuck yeah. No.
Even you can attach that logic to humans. Have you met more good people than fucking horrendous animals? We shouldn't destroy TikTok for bad TikToks, and we shouldn't destroy humanity over bad humans. I'm kidding. We should destroy TikTok and humans.
I have a few stories for you. Boys, I'll start off with the thing that's pissing me off. If I'm in a foul mood, then I apologize in advance. But basically, what happened is I had a pair of headphones. This is just a cheapy fucking piece of shit headphones. They crapped out on me, so I went and I bought like new headphones. They're also cheapy, shitty headphones for just everyday use. Just plug into my phone, watching YouTube videos, fucking listening to music, or even for this recording right now. I'm using some shitty headphones attached to the mic. Exactly. Yeah. I took it with me to work today, and in between patients sometimes I'm like, fuck it, I have a bit of downtime, so I watch a YouTube video or something or whatever, right? I put it in the pocket something like scrubs, basically. Then I forgot about it. And then at the end of the workday, I took off my scrubs and then I threw them down the fucking chute where it goes into the laundry, basically. And my fucking headphones are still there. So I'm gonna go tomorrow. I'm gonna hope that they're garbage headphones, honestly. But I don't want the hassle to go and get new ones. So yeah, I'll go and dig through fucking dirty clothes tomorrow and see if I can find them.
You want the hassle of digging through the biohazardous scrubs.
Isn't that fucking insane? We've managed to... Now I'm going to take it to like fucking 500 meters away from the actual conversation, but still it's relevant. We've managed to optimize production and minimize labor cost to such a level that it's a bigger pain to walk to the shop to buy something than to actually pay the money for it, right? It's fucking wild.
That is true. Yeah. No, that's true.
All of ordering food is basically built around that concept. You calculate how much money your time is worth versus how long it's going to take you to cook versus how long it's going to take for delivery and how many things you can do in the time in which you are not cooking. We literally started to think like time is actually money, which I guess at the end of the day it is. And it's more valuable than actually buying a thing.
Yeah, no, that was related actually because you mentioned the food delivery thing. It's like unless a fucking place doesn't deliver around your parts, there's a place that's literally, I don't know why, it's maybe... like 10 minutes away, 5 minutes, between 5 and 10 minutes away from my place. It's a Turkish like grill place. And they don't fucking deliver to where I live. So yesterday I went out with a bunch of
fucking
friends
Turks.
After work. Right. yesterday I went out after work with some friends. I mean, we tried this place and it fucking slaps. It was very, very good food. I packed some leftovers and I just had them right now. Hastily ate them right before the recording of this. Mm. I think I swallowed a fucking olive with a pit hole. Jesus Christ, it was so good. But yeah. And now the other thing, I was telling JT while Yugopnik was away. Like every once in a while, every couple of weeks, I get a new contender for the largest like ball sack I see in the fucking clinic. I'm sorry for the crude, you know, but most of the time I get like old ladies with hypertension. That's not no fucking
old lady
fun,
ball
right?
Sacks.
But anyways,
are
yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and like, you know, sometimes I look at these dudes and I'm like, are you like using bike pumps or something to what the fuck? How do you get your balls so far? Like, honestly, I could take my two hands and like try to cup their balls and they would still be spilling out the fucking corners of my hand. Like, this guy had a huge...
No way. But yeah. Like, are we talking lemon size or like orange size?
Like, no, slightly smaller than lemon. I said like decently sized limes. Yeah.
Jesus. Nice. Yeah. Nice. And by the way, it's like nothing. Thick boy.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it, the guy for the most part. Like, he has some pain. That's why I had to, you know. But so yeah.
Super endowed. Yeah. That's super fucking cool, bro.
Absolutely massive balls, like it. And of course, every couple of weeks there's a new contender. I should be keeping score at this point.
So okay. So is there a bigger diversity among male penis size or male ball size?
I think ball size is the biggest thing I've noticed, but your mileage may vary. Yeah. No, there's some
we
people
should
I've
ask
seen
you in 20 years. Yeah.
No, some people you see and they have olive size. Then some people go up to date size, and then you have these people who are fucking, you know. Limes, and they're. I'm like, how do you like? Can you even comfortably wear underwear? I don't know. This is a very. This is such a stupid thing to be starting this podcast with. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. Actually, I have like it's a medical question. Oh, so boy. Everybody that's had sex with someone else from the back knows that some butts, like butt cracks, are perfectly clean, like absolutely clean. And not meaning like cleaned with toilet paper after taking a dump. No, I mean they just like the color palette of the butt crack does not change as we're getting closer to the butt crack, right? Mm-hmm. But certain people, the closer it goes towards the butt crack, it's a bit brownish and it's not dirty like they had a shower or whatever. It's just a bit brownish. So my question is this just natural skin pigmentation, number one? Is this they just, you know, leave their ass unwiped for too long and the skin starts to take up the color of shit? Or is it something that I haven't thought of?
No, it's just melanation. It's a completely natural genetic thing. Some people have different distributions than others. Some people have different ratios of melanin, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's completely normal to have, you know, differently colored skin, and particularly around your butthole. That's completely normal. It has nothing to do with, you know, the purpose that hole is intended for.
Thank God.
But yeah, also like throughout life, particularly for women, melanation across your body can change after pregnancy and whatnot. In men, in a few rare cases.
Yeah, that's what women invented for when you go to the hospital and she gave birth to a child, which is a completely different color than you.
Oh my God, no, that's not what I meant.
In three different parts of my life, there's different melanation. It's yours, it's yours, Hakim, it's yours.
Oh Lord.
So after that little rant about sizes of butts and different ass coloring, if you're a new listener to the program, we promise you that's not what we do and what we talk about every episode. And if you're a usual listener, you know that that's exactly what we talk about every episode. But it's not all bull and ball shit, if I should say, over here. We do try to talk about something relatively serious. And recently, actually, in one of our live Q&As with some of our Patreon tiers that we did last month, we were given a great suggestion of talking about Orientalism and cultural imperialism, which, yes, they are two different things, but still relatively in the same sort of in the same strokes. Can I say that? I guess I can. So they're very misunderstood concepts, but
different eggs in one basket.
Different eggs in one basket. They're very misunderstood concepts, but extremely important when it comes to, in my opinion, the boys will say why for them, but for me they're very important because they can explain why we hold certain predefined opinions about certain parts of the world from which we've never actually met someone and places we've never actually gone to. And sometimes these notions are not only overtly negative, but overtly positive about how it usually goes some places in the West, and overtly negative about certain cultures in the East. But not to over-explain, we'll get more in detail discussing these entire concepts. So what I wanted to start with, what we wanted to start with, is kind of the broad definitions of both Orientalism and cultural imperialism. And then after that, dive in with our own personal experiences with it, with explaining how it comes to be, with explaining how socialists seek to combat it, etc., etc. So with, if I'll take the liberty to just very broadly touch on what, in my opinion, Orientalism is. If you Google it, it's going to tell you that it's the standard that the standard definition of Orientalism is the representation of Asia in a stereotyped way that is regarded as embodying a colonialist attitude. And while, yes, Orientalism of early European colonialism was very much so centered towards depicting the Asian as inherently different to the civilized Westerner in order to excuse both morally and economically policies which would obviously hurt those parts of the world but benefit the local bourgeois. But as Orientalism kind of was born during that period, it turned into a kind of active process through which all sorts of people in from wherever they are on the planet tend to define themselves somewhere in the civilizational hierarchy that they know that exists. So to say it very simply, I can talk about my part of the world. A Croat or a Serb or a Bosnian is going to, again, because of Orientalism, put himself on a lower level than a civilized German or Englishman or Frenchman with the Spanish, nah, you know, yeah, you know, they'd have their dances and shit, and they might be lazy, so they're not. But the German and the Englishman is very well educated and very well mannered, and they got their suits. So we tell ourselves, you know, we're shitty, we're not as good as them. But, and this is where the other side, the even worse side of Orientalism kicks in, we might not be as good as the English and as civilized as them, but at least we're not like the Roma. At least we're not like the Albanians or the Turks or whatever. And then the same Orientalism, which exists in Turkey, does a similar thing. It just so happens to be that our globe, the way it is set up, when you're using Orientalism, it's always some group a bit to the east to you. But it doesn't always have to be the case. Well, American, for example, Orientalism applies very much to Mexicans and South Americans in general, and they're not necessarily to the east. But I just want to like give this broader definition and to make sure that people understand that, yes, Orientalism leads to bigotry and racism towards other groups which you consider inferior to yours, but it also leads to internalized bigotry in which you think your culture is not up to par with those from which, at the end of the day, very often Orientalism stems from.
Exactly right. Beautifully put, as the bingo card says. But shout out to the subreddit. Anyways, something very interesting also is, although I appreciate you Gopniks mentioning that Orientalism can be internalized, number one, number two, that certain quote-unquote Orientals can them or Oriental groups can themselves have a sort of Orientalist outlook on other groups of people. Taking that aside, historically as well as in the present day, Orientalism has been almost exclusively a European phenomenon towards non-white groups. That's almost the built-in setup, let's say.
Hong Kong. Yeah, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. The way I think about it is or a nice way of putting it is in the superstructure and base sort of model, the spiritual superstructural successor to colonialism is and of course, like a period of time, modern neocolonialism is Orientalism, and neocolonialism itself is the economic base as it currently exists. A nice definition that kind of helps more concretely form an image of Orientalism in your mind can be derived from the Great Soviet Encyclopedia, which defined it as reflecting the colonialist racist worldview of the European and American bourgeoisie. From the very beginning, bourgeois Orientology diametrically opposed the civilizations of the so-called West with those of the East, slanderously declaring that Asian people are racially inferior, somehow primordially backward, incapable of determining their own fates, and that they appeared only as history's objects rather than its subject. Which is, again, very, very interesting. That's something that's studied. It's not something that's active or a living, breathing. By that something, I mean these people, these quote-unquote Orientals. Something to also like hammer at home. Orientalism was never a serious attempt to analyze cultures of the East or peoples of the East. What Orientalism is, it's a fundamental imagining or misimagining, mm-hmm. basically, of Absolutely. Another culture through a Western and European mind, a Western European outlook. It's completely divorced from the realities of the societies that are actually being depicted. And another way to word it, again, just so it's fully clear, it is the Occidental refusal to undertake an actual study of whatever the Orient is. The very idea of Orient II, by the way, is completely ridiculous. You can't take in, for example, the cultures and peoples and languages and religions of Mali, Algeria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and like East Asia, and put them into one blanket, you know, Oriental image or box, all right? So of course you strip these people of their agency, of their independence, of everything that makes them unique. Instead you just kind of paint with this brownish, yellowish, blackish paintbrush over basically the vast majority of humanity, to the enjoyment or depending, by the way, of the white man or of the European. This can be either for intentions of subjugation, because they want for colonial aims. This could be for example, fear out of some sort of like, you know, oh, the Muslims are going to come and, you know, fucking teach little Billy that. I don't know. What would they teach little Billy at this point? They would teach little Billy to season his food. That's what the Muslims are going to do. Or being laughed at, for example. A good example of that is Aladdin. We'll get into that. It always depends on the colonial context. It's the Orientalist worldview is those people over there are a sexy threat, right? Either we want to fuck them or they want to fuck us, but they're also dangerous. I was going to say, that's how I describe Yugopnik. he's a sexy threat.
I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but it's surprisingly entertaining to watch the wealthiest of the wealthy in a way, in order to compete with capitalists of other places in the world, use this implied Orientalism that, I mean, we talked about this before, that over here in the West, we are entrepreneurs, we're philanthropists, we are established businessmen that help our communities and make sure that the democracy is still alive, while people with similar levels of power and, you know, monetary fucking 100,000 zeros in their bank accounts over in the East are supporters of the CPC, are Russian oligarchs, are this and that. Even in the highest stratas of society, there is sort of an implication that everything ours is, even when it's bad, it's not as bad as what it can be over with Eastern weird-looking people, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of the inherent aspects of that Orientalist worldview is the complete and absolute ascendance of the West and everything Western, right? That's why exactly Yugopnik's point of the Western billionaire versus the Russian oligarch, you know, despite the fact that they're practically the same way, the same thing. It's fundamentally rooted in that sense of Western superiority. Only the West is rational and scientific and democratic and developed and progressive, etc., etc., while the East is, again, primordially backwards and underdeveloped, and by its very institution, by its very inception, every other sphere of existence is locked in some, you know, dark past, despite the fact that it was Europe that suffered the Dark Ages. Even with the term Dark Ages is kind of not the most accurate thing even to describe that period of European history, but the point stands that the same culture that gave rise to Orientalist worldviews was itself, had cultural ascendance happened in a different way, would have been viewed through Orientalist lens, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And some groups seem to be accepted into the fold, but not to the full extent. There will still, like bigoted opinions are going to be held against them. But in order to achieve relative cultural and economic integration between certain states, the West will kind of nod along with a Far Eastern quote-unquote Far Eastern country now becoming a part of the Western world. I mean, if we look at the map, Japan is the most Eastern country on the planet Earth, yet when you always read about the quote-unquote Western world, Japan is always included in it.
If the international community.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you were to write a paper, and if you were to use a Kazakhstani academic source, or a Vietnamese academic source, or a Tajik academic source, that paper would not be graded, and they would ask you to find a more legitimate academic source. Mm-hmm. But if you cite a South Korean or Japanese source, which are again, or Australian, yeah, that's the most, but that, if you cite an Australian one, you should be kicked out of university, because Australia does not exist. I think we have established this. Stop giving Australian propaganda to the ears of our listeners. It is disgusting.
All right, sorry, mate.
And he's now he's doing the invented accent. And apparently there's kangaroos there. There's a thing that likes to box, and it looks like a rabbit, but it jumps like a fuck
rabbits
off.
Also,
yeah,
jump.
Right.
Fucking Alice in Wonderland shit is this?
That is also me.
You can tell me, where's the top hat next?
I don't even know what I was talking about. But yes, all I'm saying is that they are willing to close their eyes on certain allies and increase kind of public understanding and knowledge that these people are not like the rest in the Orient. You know, they're more like us. Basically, I can't be racist. I have one black friend, but done on a general field of geopolitics. So again, it's used to both include and exclude. And when you have an exception to the rule, like Japan or South Korea, then it's indirectly proof that the rule itself exists.
I don't know why, but when he said, I'm not racist, I have a black friend, reminded me of some. There was a Twitter screenshot that I saw, and it's basically a picture of a black lady, and she's an attractive black lady, and then underneath the, you know, she has like hundreds of thousands of likes on this Twitter post, and underneath there's one guy who's like, I'm racist, but goddamn. I remember there's a long, long time ago, some like Republican senator or something, and then like some journalist accused him of being racist, and he's like, but I was like, I find African American women very attractive. I'm like, what the fuck?
Come on.
Oh my god. Oh, sorry.
Enlightened country.
Yes.
There's a brand new one that came out on May 3rd, and some guy saw a story of some lady and replied, never been into brownies, but you might make me change my mind, lol. And she replies with, brownies, ? And he replies with, brownies, you know, ethnic. You're mixed with something, aren't you? Just my little nickname. And then my dude, what the fuck? And now this dude has been screenshotted and put on Twitter, and there's 160,000 likes. So
yeah, good for him. Jesus Christ, Brown. I like how he's like, oh, you must be mixed with something. Again, it's that weird like Aryan strain, that bullshit of like, oh, you know, Persian women are attractive. That, you know, the fucking Gabino shit. It was like, oh, Persian women are attractive because there's a common connection with the whites of Europe. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? But yeah, anyways. you know, this actually kind of loosely connects. There's a point I want to make as well, is that the idea of course, that when we talk about Orientalism, there is something that's doing the observing. It's the West or the Occident. And the West as an idea likes to present itself as some kind of monolith that can stand against, you know, whatever this other is. But the very idea of being Western, Occidental makes absolutely no sense, because there's no, it's not based on skin color or ethnicity or government or geography, even fucking geography. There's, you know, like Europe, for some reason, apparently extends into Armenia and Georgia, but Azerbaijan is where, like, the line is cut. Right, Turkey, like Christian Turkey or Byzantine Turkey, was considered, Byzantine Turkey was considered to be, you know, ooh, a good Christian land, and somehow included as part of the West at the time. And then the second the you know, it becomes Muslim, all of a sudden it's not anymore. Likewise with the Moors of Spain, many of which were ethnic Spaniards, but then all of a sudden it's like, ooh, but they're Muslim, so yeah. And one important point I'm just gonna try to hammer home, that the very formation of the concept of being the West has a fundamental pillar of it was standing against Islam, and that continues into this day. And for a brief interim period during the 20th century, it was also standing against communism. Right, you're not Western unless you're, you know, you're a free marketeer. You don't want to give women rights, and you know, the fascists that have been in power for 20 years, that, you know, a revolution, not a revolution happened, but, you know, they lost the war. Those people are conveniently still mayors, and we're gonna make one of them like the deputy head of like NATO, yeah. And the other guy is just gonna, he's gonna be like, okay, this other guy, he's gonna run our rocket program. Yeah, we know he, you know, and then this other dude used to experiment on twins. You will give us your research data, and then we're just going to give you like a quiet life in the Midwest. People just won't know about you. You know, oh my God.
We imported so many of them. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Like Operation,
look up Operation Paperclip.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Oh, it's whack.
By the way, in before, these people are like, oh, fucking, but the Soviets took Nazi scientists. Yeah, but the Soviets took in Nazi scientists and put them to fucking work, all right? Unlike the Americans, who were like, they were clinking glasses with them. It was like, yeah, 2 weeks ago, we were clinking glasses too, so, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Maybe we can just, like, very briefly talk about the political relevance of Orientalism.
Sure.
There are many ways we can... this is the thing. One of the fundamental works that actually opened up this entire field of study was Edward Said's Orientalism, which I highly recommend everybody reads. There are two books that you have to read. Absolutely. Like, you have no excuse. It's Edward Said's Orientalism and Frantz Fanon's The Wretched of the Earth. These two are absolute must-reads. They're incredibly entertaining. It's going to broaden your mind. Anyways, it opened up a huge field of study that you can spend your, like, you know, years studying this stuff at this point. So many different works have been written. But the fundamental point is your analysis can differ. It can be from music or movies or foreign policy, etc., etc. I'm going to talk about just political relevancy of this very briefly. My own country, Iraq, has been at the head, the butt end. What do you guys? What do you Americans say? Is it the butt end? Is that right?
Like,
is it the rifle? Like butt end of.
So there's the butt of the joke. You get the raw end of the deal. You get the short straw. Okay. You get
the short stick. Whatever. Okay.
What you got options. Okay, I got options.
Get raw handled.
Yeah. Whatever. Yes. Exactly.
You get
all bare backed. Okay.
Copy.
Okay. My country has been absolutely fucked up by the entire concept of Orientalism, because the two illegal invasions of wars of aggression against my country were fundamentally fueled by an Orientalist world outlook. Iraqis had been systematically, by the way, this goes for Arabs and Muslims in general, but during those short periods, specifically Iraq, were systematically dehumanized. Our agency was taken away from us. Our independence was taken away from us. Everything was a weird black and white thing. They do this always with the foreign policy enemies of the United States. Right, the people are all either they hate us and they support Al Qaeda and all that kind of shit. They absolutely hate us. They hate our freedoms. I don't know how American freedoms got all the way into Iraq, but no, because they're going to fight for you know, freedom. That's the bullshit they say. Point being. Either we're absolute enemies that can't, you know, every single one of us, even the fucking 4-year-old, which they kind of recreated that in the, what's that fucking shitty movie, American Sniper?
Yeah.
Of the war criminal that ended up dying because he shot a gas station or something.
That's
fuck fun. Him. Yeah. And I think there's a scene. I never watched the movie because my brain will explode like from anger. So, but I think I remember there's a scene from a movie where there's like a 5-year-old or something, and he's like, "Oh, I shouldn't shoot him," but then turns out like, "Oh, he's helping the insurgents, the terrorists, who are, you know, fighting in their own community, like where the street that this guy was born. Right? He's armed himself and he wants to defend. He's like, "Oh, he's an insurgent terrorist." Right? Fucking. My God. But yeah. Again, and like, he kills a kid. I don't fucking know. I wouldn't put it beneath him.
Yeah.
Anyways, my point being, it's either that or we're completely brainwashed. They do this with the North Koreans and the Chinese and the Cubans and stuff like that. Completely brainwashed. They don't know anything about the outside world. They have no knowledge of economics or politics or just general world news. They don't know what their government actually does. Every single thought of theirs is controlled, which hilariously is what kind of goes on in most of the West, particularly the United States. Ask an American to point, you know, North Korea on a map, let alone like tell you what their system of governance is or what the average people think. Yeah, it's let alone for, you know, a place like Turkmenistan or something like Turkmenistan. I thought that was what's that movie called? Was it Borat? Is that what Borat was? No, I know it's Kazakhstan, but yeah. Americans never seem to disappoint in these things. But yeah, that's just my point. very scattered, but the TLDR is you get a outlook that is incredibly simplistic in order to drum up popular support for a war that otherwise would not be wanted. This was done in Afghanistan. This was done in Iraq, and they're done. The way this is done is very sneakily. It's either done in the two ways I mentioned previously, or it's reinforced through media quite a bit. If you there's a good book and a documentary I've recommended several times. It's called Real Bad Arabs, R-E-E-L, like a film reel, which shows depictions of Arabs and how they are orientalist, and shows that every time when there's a lead up to a war in the Middle East, or West Asia is more appropriately, you have this increased orientalist media, particularly of them as being enemies. Again, I mentioned that point before of one of the Transformers movies, for some reason the fucking Autobots are going and fighting terrorists in the desert. Yeah. For some fucking reason, you know, aliens would come and descend on the earth and then decide to support the United States. Of course, that's what they would do.
Yep.
Right. But yeah, they wouldn't be like, "That's an empire of hate, I think we should do something against that." But yeah, of course this also seeps into education and cultural understandings, and something that will be a bit not controversial, but yeah, I have to tiptoe around it, but it's true. There's something called pink and rainbow imperialism that definitely plays into orientalist perspectives. And it's the pink imperialism is, "Oh, the women of Afghanistan, they're suffering so badly. We need to go there and bomb the ever-living shit out of them so that we can save the women," despite the fact that American intervention has systematically worsened the condition of women in the region, everywhere. Everywhere they're intervened, by the way, even in Latin America, number one. And number two, the rainbow imperialism, this is something that's a beginning now, is, "Oh, there's a discrimination against LGBT people, so we have to, you know, do XYZ." And then as a result, usually this paradoxically creates even worse anti-LGBT attitudes or even laws up to a point. And there's a good book by Yusuf Massoud, it's called Desiring Arabs, which is a very good section on basically this entire concept of rainbow imperialism and, for example, the Egyptian laws, anti-LGBT laws in Egypt, and how as a result of quote-unquote NGOs, American and other Western pro-LGBT or LGBT right NGOs, they've created a new environment where of discrimination where previously there was not, at least to an extent. Also, it kind of plays into the part that the LGBT rights they care about are usually only for upper middle class and upper class LGBT people of the imperial core, usually white people, and usually has connotations towards the sex trade. With, for example, one of the biggest drives was sex tourism in Egypt. Older gay men, for example, very wealthy gay men going to Egypt to sleep with young Egyptian men, etc., etc. Very interesting book. Check out Desiring Arabs. Yeah. There's so much more to say, but somebody take it away from me.
Yeah, just a little side note. It's going to be really funny, you know, darkly funny, going forward, watching the United States try to spin involvement in other countries as, you know, protecting the rights of women or of gay people. And, like, right here at home, right now, we are rewinding the clock on rights of all sorts like that. Like the abortion thing, that's going away. Soon after, it's going to be gay marriage. Guarantee it. These things are being stripped away at home, so now they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot in that they can no longer claim to care about those rights if they're taking them away at home. But yeah, just a little side note.
All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. Animal Farm.
They won't blink twice. They will ban abortion at home, but protect abortion abroad.
Yeah.
I mean, the American foreign policy always was based on just fictionally spewing propagandistic terms on why we are going into place A, B, or C, which is almost never relevant to where that same soldier is coming from. Very often, there were more than enough reports of soldiers having a better life standard in a military base than they do when they go back
home. Oh, yeah.
Etc. etc. But we're already seeing a relative shift in the approach towards how we are explaining away potential reasons for why we need to intervene and not only intervene but also protect our borders from the Orientals. And what Hakim mentioned is becoming more and more relevant exactly in the field of keeping foreigners out. Up until recently, it was, I mean, we talked about this before as well, but up until recently, it was protecting Western values, protecting our religion, protecting our way of life. But as a bigger chunk of the voting body is becoming more and more socially progressive, and as they care less and less about those issues and more about progressive issues, the messaging needs to be adapted. So you are not letting in the Oriental who does not understand how to treat a woman and molests women in order to protect women's rights at home. And parties like those of Marie Le Pen really successfully use this sort of rhetoric. But it just shows just how relevant the discussion of Orientalism is and how it can mold and change actively. We've completely forgot about the Orientalism of weed, for example. Oh, it's the Jamaicans, it's the Arabs and their hush, you know, just smoking hush, those videos in old movies where they're sitting in like a basement with red tinted windows and there's like ladies doing belly dancing and like, oh, Indiana Jones is walking in between them and shit. Now weed is extremely mainstream. I would argue the most mainstream.
It's been gentrified.
psycho substance. Yeah, literally gentrified. Or we should say de-orientalized. Why? Again, everything comes to the discussion of class. Because there is an objective financial interest in selling you weed. I'm not knocking weed. I'm just saying a lot of people can make money out of weed. So let's turn it into like a cool, hip thing that everybody can do and not necessarily, you know, those low pants wearing dudes from the part of town you never go to. And we'll see that being adapted to almost every other aspect of a society that we might be looking at as the audience. But as funny as it is, but we will be gentrifying one or the other thing that kind of can make some good money, like food, like clothes eventually, et cetera, et cetera, without addressing our biases towards those very same peoples from which we are getting inspired with our products from. There's nothing wrong with being inspired or spreading the love for cultures and shit. I'm going to be the last guy that's going to fucking shout cultural imperialism at you. But you cannot at the same time think that, I don't fucking know, Indians are dirty, but then wear their fucking clothes all the time and are fucking passionate about, I don't know, Hinduism and shit. That's where the hypocrisy comes in. That's where quote-unquote cultural, that's not even appropriation, that's fucking cultural rape, sorry for the lack of the other word, comes in. And that's the fucking disgusting shit.
When you mentioned the way that basically it becomes respectable when it's a white industry, like for example in case of weed. And there's a very good song by Bambu, B-A-M-B-U, the rapper, in Exercising a Demon, that album, the last song on it. He basically, it's a song exactly about this, about how, you know, brown black people made the industry, but then white people took it over and made it quote unquote legitimate, and you can have a bunch of people, again, white people in industry, who are making a killing off of it. Meanwhile, the people who made the market in the first place are probably in prison. It's a very interesting song, so I just check that out, number one. And number two, when Yugopnik said de-orientalizing, immediately, I imagined him with a turtleneck and like thick Tito glasses in a professor's chair, and me without clothes.
Oh my.
Oh yeah, yes. Someone's gonna draw that.
Yeah, please do. Did you see the picture of the meme on the subreddit where it's those weird mobile ads?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, God. JT is pregnant.
Yeah, JT is pregnant. He's like, my husband, it's me. And Yugopnik is like brushing my leg shaving with a toothbrush. I don't know what he's doing. Oh, he's shaving. Oh my God, I have such a triumphant look on my face.
I like that. It's got me feeling things that I didn't think I would be feeling.
Exactly.
But especially about pregnant JT. I mean, yes. JT, very attractive. Prego JT.
Oh my God. Don't be a degenerate, please.
But on a serious note, I don't know if we can still deem it, we call it Orientalism, we potentially could, but in very, very large countries, like, okay, most of our listeners are from the US, so we can use the US as an example, and you, JT, can tell us your experience as a Texan. You can notice a cultural shift which has existed probably since the Civil War, in which the North, especially the industrial cores of it, from New York to Boston to New Jersey and to LA or whatever, even though those are the East and the West, but you get my point, there is a sort of dividing line in how they themselves perceive themselves, the New Yorker as the prime of American culture, yeah, and of where every trend is born, and you know, the titans of industry and so on, versus the image of the rural redneck, for lack of a better word, which we all know where the term comes from, and how there's kind of these two Americas. I mean, there's like 15 Americas in every single space, but when we're talking about culture, as if there's this genuine way certain parts of the states see themselves versus those backwards, dirty motherfuckers over there who are all this or that, et cetera, et cetera.
Even within the United States, like as a Texan, when I moved to Connecticut in like eighth grade, I went to school and, you know, I'd introduced myself to people, and some of them were like, do you guys have roads? Do you still use like horse and buggies? And I'm like, it's like anywhere else. We've got roads. We drive cars. Mm-hmm. It was very strange because there is a perception in different parts of the country how like different cultures, even within the United States, are, you know, backwards or whatever. It's very interesting. And Texas is definitely one of those that has a stereotype. And that's shifting more, I think, as people from places like New York and California move to Texas. It's becoming kind of more known as a, you know, middle-of-the-country business hub like New York or something like that, just, you know, with more cowboy hats and horses. But, yeah, there's definitely a prejudice against places whose cultures are seen as inferior or backwards, like places like Alabama, for example, Mississippi, places like that. Yeah, it's very real.
I can absolutely imagine. Yeah, I mean, from the perspective of a non-American, I've always, even in your films, in your books, in the way everything is even advertised, there's always been two Americas. There's been Hollywood, there's been the, you know, bling bling, then there's been Wall Street, the capitalists, and then I imagine a guy with a cowboy hat herding, his stock, which out of those three categories, obviously I relate to the last one the absolute most. But then I had the opportunity to only like go to places in the States where I only get to see the first two categories. Mm-hmm. And there's always been this this balance in my brain, especially when I talk to people, and they usually hold relatively backwards opinions on the south of the U.S., mm. where they genuinely, what I talked about previously, they say, okay, us Americans are not as civilized, as New Yorkers are not as civilized as the dude from Paris, but we could be much worse. Look at those mm-hmm. fucking cousin fuckers down in the south.
We could be from Wisconsin. And, I'm sorry.
Oh, Chattanooga. Oh, Lord Christ. But you get my. It's that's why it's for me. I'm trying to not take away from what Orientalism, the part of the world that Orientalism has impacted the most without any fucking discussion at all. And just to tell people that a lot of even leftists think that, okay, because they understand socialism and because they're socially progressive, et cetera, that they still can't hold certain incredibly biased and stereotype-infested opinions of even places that are very close to them and places that they've never even been to or met a person from. And when you understand that, you kind of start questioning biases, and then you start changing them. So we can help at least change one or two biases, because probably most of the people listening do not, you know, hold bigoted opinions against the Orient, but they might, the Orient, a fucking weird word, but you get my point. But most probably do against poor people in their very own communities or their very own countries, because they associate, for example, that poverty with a culture of, I don't know, impoliteness mm-hmm. and lack of culture, et cetera, et cetera. And we are very, and that is a massive problem of the left, at least in the West, that I've noticed, because it really disenfranchises a lot of potential socialists and communists from joining the movement, because it all the most of the leadership in a lot of the local parties is very much so led by people with an academic background, people from a relatively wealthy background or middle class background, which is all fine and it's perfect. Thank you for leading them the movement, etc., etc. But it's undeniable that very often these people hold semi-orientalist views towards those who have not had the same upbringing that they've had. And us as materialists should absolutely avoid that like the plague, because it's fucking reactionary as shit.
Yeah, the beauty of Orientalism is it will tell you that me and Yugopnik are exactly the same. We're basically the same thing. Meanwhile, somehow Belgians and French people are different. You can't tell me that Belgium is a real country. Fuck you. Sorry, go on.
We would need a whole fucking episode. Belgium is not a country. Belgium, in order to drive attention away from themselves not being a real country, the people of Belgium have invented Australia, so that we all talk about giant spiders and massive jumping boxer rabbits, okay? Yeah. So that is the theory that I am developing. Very it's nice called theory. The what was the like the weird Nazbols, they were what, the third wave? No, the fourth wave. Okay, I'm
at
creating
first,
the fifth
at first
wave.
They're like, oh, we're third position, that was the bullshit, and now they're calling it
third positionist. Yes. I am a fifth positionist. My whole ideology is Australia does not exist. That's my whole ideology, like vote for me because Australia doesn't exist.
He makes a compelling point. I don't know what to say.
That's right.
But yeah,
Well, we're approaching an hour, and have we given a definition of cultural imperialism yet?
I don't think so. I think okay. We're talking too much shit.
Okay, let's.
That's why I put it a second, but then we started and orientalism is very interesting.
Just before,
but yes,
just before you go into the intro on that, I was just gonna say, Yugopnik in the Australia speech, he was on. It reminded me of an American saying, which is being on the soapbox. Which, yeah. By the way, what the fuck does that mean? So there are boxes of soap, and then why were soapboxes or boxes that previously held soap that no longer hold soap? Why are the
I
why
have
are they
never
the,
heard that
article of choice for when you want to speak publicly?
Yeah, it's just a good sturdy box that you could turn over and put down on a street corner
sure
and stand
the boxes
on it.
That, what about the boxes like potatoes come in and shit? Like,
well, our potatoes come in bags.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
you guys are savages.
Wait, what? Ours come in cardboard boxes. Yeah. What the fuck do your potatoes come in?
Yeah, it's like a... most of the time, it's a plastic bag, like a perforated plastic bag or one of those mesh bags.
Mesh bags with the holes in them, right?
No. I'm talking about like when you're getting the delivery into your local grocery, not when you take home. You don't take a fucking... like a wooden fucking... No, that's not what I meant. Jesus Christ.
Okay, yes.
That's
those
what
come
I meant.
In boxes.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know why it was a soapbox that got picked. Maybe it was just soap vendors who were super into speaking on street corners. I don't know. Let's look into it. Somebody look it up for us.
I'm just going to look at the picture of a soapbox. None of them look nearly sturdy enough to stand on. This is a fucking crock of shit. This is American imperialism. This is cultural imperialism right here. This is bullshit. This shit that doesn't exist. Okay, sorry. Go on.
Good give segue just do this real simply. So think of cultural imperialism like going for a culture victory in Civ. You're imposing your culture on other often weaker cultures with the goal of establishing your nation's culture as the dominant one in the target nation. So, for example, McDonald's appearing in occupied or otherwise targeted countries, or Coca-Cola, or trendy Western clothing, or Nick Cage movies. I watched one the other night, by the way. Remind me to tell you guys about it. It was garbage. Mm-hmm. or American TV shows is another example. So all of these are byproducts of cultural imperialism. And this was a thing way before the U.S. even existed. A lot of people use it specifically when talking about the U.S., but powerful nations have very often attempted to spread their cultures as far as they can throughout history. This was super apparent during the era of European colonialism. They would export fashion, religion, food, even stuff like architecture, and countless other peculiarities to the target nations that they were, you know, trying to quote-unquote civilize.
No, beautifully put. Sorry. I got sidetracked by actually reading up on the stupid soapbox.
All right, tell us what you found.
Oh, God.
No, sorry. The only reason it stood out to me is because when you scroll down the Wikipedia thing, it's like contemporary soapboxing. And there's some video or a picture of Marianne Williamson, I don't know who this is, speaking with supporters at the Des Moines Register's political soapbox event. The Des Moines Register is apparently a newspaper in Des Moines, Iowa.
Oh, Des Moines. Des Moines. That was a good attempt,
Des
Moines.
Though.
Des Moines? Oh, fuck me, I'm so stupid. Yeah, that isn't... Okay. Well, French is a waste of time, so I'm not supposed to know.
Well, that's you are pronouncing it how the French would pronounce it, presumably. But we're ignorant here in the States.
How is that actually pronounced?
Des Moines.
Des Moines. Okay, my bad. Des Moines has 215,000 people. For an American city, that's very small, no?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's like a perfect square. How do people live here? Jesus Christ. Counties, Polk and Warren. They live in a place
what
called Polk.
What are you talking about?
Hakeem is fascinated by the United States.
there's like a Monsanto, like,
reverse orientalism.
Here? What the fuck is this? The Iowa State Capitol is there. It's like some weird Byzantine building. That's actually very nice architecture. Okay, sorry. This is Chattanooga again. Oh my god. Okay, sorry. Go on.
That's pretty much all I had.
Yeah, sorry. The roof of the thing is very tacky. It has like an American flag on it. Okay, back on topic. Yes, cultural imperialism.
No, they should have a Iraqi flag on it.
Yeah, exactly. Inshallah, one day.
bait successful.
But yeah, what JT said was actually very what he always says is very correct.
Oh,
the Habibi. Culture imperialism, of course, by the way, is in a weird way also correlated with connection a country has with basically external financial markets and quote-unquote cultural and linguistic connection, right? There's a reason, for example, that let's say Australia, for example, this country that doesn't exist, has more connection or is more affected by cultural imperialism than, let's say, Kazakhstan. Despite the fact that, for example, Kazakhstan also has certain, at least certain parts of the ruling body that have been turning towards the West, and particularly the United States, the cultural history as well as other factors haven't allowed the penetration of this idea of all culture is basically American culture to seep in. And that's fundamentally the point, of course. And there are different parts of the world where there's like some level of cultural imperialism, but by far the absolute heavyweight champion of this is the United States, right? You go to Spain, you go to Nigeria, you go to Brazil, you go to Japan, you're gonna see American media everywhere.
Yeah.
But if you go to, again, Spain or Brazil or Japan or wherever else, you're not gonna see Iraqi media or Indian media or Bulgarian media or even other non-English, non-American English speaking countries. Like, for example, New Zealand or Canadian, even British to an extent, isn't that prevalent, despite the fact that it used to have such a high standing as a form of colonial power, all that bullshit.
My contribution to the conversation would be to explain in an extremely simplistic way how, through American cultural imperialism, how cultural imperialism in general tends to seep into a specific place. So you have the world market, you have capitalism, you have countries trading amongst each other, you have deals and agreements between states that any business which wants to operate on their local territory is allowed to come, open their office, pay local taxes, and expand and operate in the same manner in which a local business operates. When you have a incredibly wealthy country like the United States, which is not only financially but militarily and now culturally dominant over every single inch of the planet, almost every single inch, then you have these open free market borders, then what happens? Well, the businesses with the most capital, the biggest advertising budget, and the most developed octopod of logistics spread to the largest parts of the world. They find themselves as the highest quality products. They find themselves as items which show success, which show progress. They co-sign themselves not only as American in being from the United States, but as places which come to your country carrying the stereotypical American values that we all know. So cultural imperialism in capitalism specifically, where the biggest driving factor is consumption, because consumption leads to profitability, will eventually be consumerism. But this is not something we should be pointing at the US and saying, okay, this is like specifically an American problem. If tomorrow the invented country of Australia becomes the most wealthy and most militarily and geopolitically powerful country on planet Earth, we would be seeing a shift in following and consuming more and more of Australian culture. Because, again, due to the free market, it would slowly seep in absolutely everywhere. But as we know, not all of us are walking around with cowboy hats, nor are we reading Jane Austen novels. So the cultural imperialism which we are experiencing in a constantly globalized world where the US is a hegemon isn't necessarily actual real American culture being imported to our shores, but it's the for-profit kind of invented by the market definitions of what it is to be American, which at the end of the day is to wear jeans, to eat at McDonald's, and to drink Coca-Cola.
And to watch fucking Friends. Jesus Christ. And oh my God. I fucking hate
friends. I fucking despise friends. Yes. It's the worst. Really? Oh my God. A man of taste. Yeah. It's so fucking. I could never have watched like five episodes. Or, oh Lord. Oh, what's that fucking show where that guy screams Bazinga?
Oh, oh my God. No.
Oh God.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh God.
Jesus Christ. Really, that, this is the garbage that's fucking exported. God forbid. I wish people were reading Jane Austen novels or something. You know, at least people are reading.
Yeah. Two and a Half Men is kind of okayish. It's kind of okayish. You know, I can survive it.
I have never watched an American sitcom that I've never, you know, sat and be like, I've never thought to myself like, I can sit here. I can watch this. It's like, it's an elective lobotomy watching this shit. I swear to God.
Well, I think that's
humilitism.
That's the idea, though. It's to present you with something that you don't even have to know when you're supposed to laugh yourself. That's fed to you as well. Anything with a laugh track. It's like, okay, laugh now. This is the funny part.
I promise you, if the Soviet Union made shows, made like TV where there was a laugh track, they'd be like, oh, look how authoritarian, look how horrible, horrific, and then and totalitarian this is. They tell them when to laugh, and then it's like, stop.
No, there would be like there would be like hearings in which they are like getting together actual like serious lawyers and academics, and they would be like, but how are they forcing them to laugh? They must be pointing AK-47s at them. Yeah. Like there's the guy doing the TV talk show, and there's like 20 Soviets with their Ushankas pointing like RPGs at the crowd. Because, you know, in Soviet country, that is the only way to force men to laugh. But in America, you turn on big red sign, it say laugh, and they do the laugh now. But yeah, Jesus it's... Christ, it's fucking amazing. No, the sitcoms in general. Though Modern Family was not
Modern Family
bad.
Is decent. Modern Family is decent.
But is that a sitcom, though? It's not really.
Also, by the way, again, we mentioned this before, but again, the selling of the American lifestyle, which again, it's a form of power projection on the United States. They make an act. They're not stupid. They make an active effort. And the powers that be have a vested interest in basically presenting the United States a very specific way through their TV, through their media, through their music, and whatever else. By, for example, projecting this idea that, oh, you know, an average American family, literally it's called Modern Family, of which all of them live in huge houses, multi-story homes, right? Aside from the gay couple, I think. All the other ones live in basically multi-story homes, right? There's one person working, I believe. For example, in the main family, right? The husband, the wife, and the three kids. I think it's only the husband who's working as a realtor. And he's providing somehow in this modern American economy, providing university bills and like paying for everything else just on his own, on one realtor salary. I don't know if that doesn't sound like it would be a luxurious lifestyle, but
depends on
they all have hot wives. They all have hot wives. That is impossible. That is an American propaganda. Okay, whatever.
Well, even all of our commercials are just like that, and it's become a trope now, because anytime a commercial comes on TV and they're trying to sell you, I don't know, soap or something or whatever it is, there's like a young, maybe 25-year-old woman, and she lives in this gorgeous house with like marble everything, and it's all clean and white and immaculately decorated. It's like, that's not
just like
possible.
The nation should be.
Yeah. What you're showing me is a lie. It's
I mentioned
meanwhile,
this before,
Eastern, normal standard Eastern European that goes to Austria and works for like 3-4 months and literally lives in a 4-story household made out of marble, watching a TV ad with that same woman and going like in living in that luxury house and going, oh my God, why are they showing poor people on the television?
Yeah, honestly, well, I was gonna say, this is the Home Alone phenomenon where you. That's seriously that did a number. Like I was a kid, I was looking, I was like, I don't believe this is how Americans live. Is this how Americans live? You know, they're all multimillionaires living in fucking right? Jesus Christ.
It's not like there's a group of people in a room that are like, oh my God, we need to create an image of America all over the world, which is like this and this. Yes, it existed big time during the Cold War, but now there's no need to even allocate a budget to it. Private companies do it for you through advertising. If they want to sell you Burger King in fucking Hungary, they first need to sell you America equals quality, equals freedom, equals good burgers, equals come eat here. So it's everything's been outsourced. No wonder the CIA doesn't know what it's doing anymore.
There's a Hard Rock Cafe at Checkpoint Charlie in Berlin. Is that all you need to fucking know about cultural imperialism? There's a fucking, and there's, I think there's a KFC as well. It's like, oh, here's this piece of Cold War history. And then right, it's like, and over there is some fucking overpriced garbage. Yeah. Do you want some fucking...
The biggest definition of cultural imperialism I can give you for my life is, I still tell it to people, it's fucking insane. We went to an excursion with my primary school to Italy. We went to fucking Bologna, an incredibly beautiful place. Mm. And out of a class of 30 people, only me and two others went to sit in an Italian restaurant. 27 of them went to the fucking McDonald's.
Oh, my Lord.
In Bologna. Oh, fuck. What the... That is not the definition of cultural imperialism, I don't know what it is.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
That's insane. Yeah. And you mentioned CIA a minute ago, and that made me think. I was scrolling through, because Kelsey's in Zimbabwe, and I'm bored to death. So I was scrolling through things to watch, and there are like a dozen things where the plot is like, this guy's a CIA agent, or this flight attendant's a CIA agent, or this guy was an ex-CIA agent, and they're bringing him back in. It's like, wow, we really need to sell these as like the good guys who are going around heroes, the world doing good.
So successful.
That's incredible.
So successful. To me, it's still impossible to admit it. To me, a CIA agent is basically a Gestapo officer, almost one to one. Maybe not as racist. Okay, whatever. One to one, but I still can't imagine, because I think CIA agent, fucking think Denzel Washington, I fucking think very good looking blonde dude in a fucking suit saving a lady from a potential car explosion in a country where he's not supposed to be in. But when I was young watching that movie, I did not realize that. But yeah, you get the point. It's impossible. Like, to me, when I think of CIA agent, I don't feel anything like necessarily negative. And then my brain starts working in the second and third second and fourth and fifth, and then. But I'm so brainwashed to think FBI as well. Oh my God, solving fucking serial killer crimes, fucking helping out the community. Man, these people are sacrificing so much just because I fucking watched so many fucking films and shows that have absolutely ingrained this in me. And I keep watching them, and they keep like hiring these very good actors, and they keep writing them as these like cut dry good guys. So yeah, good job on mentioning that, because it's not just the replacing of local cultures with those from whatever the dominant economic power is, but it's also the whitewashing of just what that culture, which is domineering over others, is in the first place, which is a very, very important distinction. Bro, I didn't think of that.
But also what, you're telling me if you're watching a show, he's like, former militia agent. He's a former militia.
Nobody would take it back. Seriously. Like, no, tell me, if somebody made a movie with like and created like three characters who are former Saddam Hussein's guard and tried to settle like personal guard, whatever they were called, the elite units. Right? Yeah. And they're like presented as these like cut and dry, just like good guys. No matter how big of a like Saddam stan one would be, or like Iraqi ultranationalist, or for me, if they showed like some guy from the Milosevic's secret police, some Orante Pavelic's secret police, or Tudjman's secret police, and be like a good guy, I would fucking, no matter how like nationalistic I might be, I would like cringe. I was like, fuck, man, what is this shit propaganda that they're actually playing on TV? But for some reason, when it's an MI6 agent, you don't get the same reaction. You don't. There's a whole series, 007, and I go watch it, and they're usually very good. Like, what the fuck is wrong with us? I don't know.
Like, I'm an alcoholic who forces myself on women. And then people are like, oh, clap. Oh. Jesus Christ. But yeah, so that's exactly right. And what kind of makes it even worse is that a lot of people don't realize that there is this. Okay, people intrinsically know that, yeah, there's cultural imperialism, there is all this American media, even to the way that people speak. For example, simple things like texting, text speech patterns in other languages are affected by American slang, stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. You're telling me, like, oh, I'm sure there's some very interesting slang they use in Uganda, but some guy sitting in Florida is not going to be using that slang.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that guy in Uganda most likely will know about, you know, like, oh, Chick-fil-A be bussin'. I don't know.
Really? He'll probably... Even tiny terms, like my dad, who doesn't speak a word of English, he writes "polisa" to say please, PLS, or "lol." He writes "lol," "lmao," and like, "Dad, where did you hear that?" And he's like, "I don't fucking know. My girlfriend sent me that shit."
I love it, but yeah, exactly right. And people are. Exactly right. People realize this, but then they're like, so what? It's harmless. And in a way, it can be, but also in a way, you're kind of doing the State Department's work for them. Not to be like, ooh, paranoid fucking tinfoil hat stuff. But at the end of the day, also, putting aside, like, you know, local cultural influences being basically cornered out from their, you know, they're from home ground, basically. What you also end up doing is you end up creating a cultural familiarity with the perspectives of the United States, particularly also when it comes to, for example, the things that the United States tries to project, their foreign policy, their power, both economic, political, and military, etc. This creates another point of relevance or understanding, and that kind of ties back into the point of the CIA agent. For example, a Croatian guy can sit and watch a movie where it's like, oh, CIA agent or former CIA agent, and see him as a good guy and not think twice. But if it was the same movie and it said KGB agent or former KGB agent, he would have a thing or two to say about, oh, well, why is he being portrayed as a good guy? You know, all that kind of shit.
Like, you know, grabbing balls, not realistic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he should be licking them, not grabbing them. That's what the KGB... But yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Yeah, the NKVD grabbed them, and KGB, after the reforms... From NKVD to KGB, it's no leaking. Yeah. Yes, apologies. Right.
And then it was revisionism. So they went to just kind of light fondling. It's a shame. See, that's why we're against crucified revisionism on this podcast.
At one point, they even stopped harassing people. Fucking revisionist.
My God, right?
Okay, so I forgot to tell you guys about the Nick Cage movie that I said I wasn't going to forget to tell you about. All right, so I love... Nick Cage movies, like, for as long as I can remember, I've watched Nick Cage movies and enjoyed the hell out of them.
Such an inspiration.
I know, he's great.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
Man, people are gonna cancel me for this, but I really like Lord of War.
Same, that's my favorite one from his. That's my favorite movie. Series pick.
Hell yeah! Okay, good. But that one's a lot of fun.
Stereotypical depiction of Eastern Europeans, but yeah. I approve. I give my sign. You get the S pass.
The intro to that movie is fantastic. Like the life of the bullet thing. That was really, really cool. Man. Really clever.
Dude, that was cool.
I
would make a whole movie with the life of a bullet.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That was my idea. Now everybody's going to steal it. That would be so cool. It can go like first in the, not a bullet, or a gun, because the bullet is going to only be fired
like
once.
Like the red violin, but with an AK.
Yeah, with an AK. So it goes to some guy in Alabama to shoot in his field, and he sells it. Then it gets stolen from a shop. Then it's used in gangster shootouts. Then from there, it's lost, and then it's... found by police, and it's put in those large stockpiles, which are mass sold to some warring country, and then we see the experiences there.
Some Serbian guy picks it up.
Blah blah blah. But it could like look at, I don't know, 10 different lifestyles, 10 different conflict zones through one film, and tell like different short stories. And I just told it in front of around, I don't know, 60,000-70,000 listeners.
Support the Patreon, we'll make it happen. We'll make it happen. We have a cinematographer on board. It's fine.
That's true.
I was going to say, by the way, not to drill, let you get to your point. So, but if a liberal made a video of the life of a bullet or a movie of the life of a bullet, it will probably be like that movie Blood Diamond. in which basically it shows like how horrible blood diamonds are, and then in the end they're like, please buy diamonds responsibly.
It's like classic.
It would be the same. It's like, yeah, it's good. It will show a bullet enter it, like it'll be like some ethnic cleansing, and it'll be a kid being shot on the back of the head, and then in the end it goes to black and it's like, please buy your ammunition responsibly. Walmart stocks was a cruelty free ammunition. sorry, go on, JT.
Yes, Nick Cage movies, apologies.
Yeah, you're good. So the one I watched last night was Prisoners of the Ghostland. Have you guys seen this one or heard of it?
I don't know this.
Okay.
Is it a non-English speaking movie? Because that sounds like a translation.
It's made by, the director is a Japanese guy. He's like in the Japanese art house scene.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Horrible titles, Japanese. It's like fucking water and sugar. Yes.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting mix. Like, the trailer makes it look like a wild, cool ride. And it's like a neo-noir samurai western kind of thing, post-apocalyptic, and like Nick Cage is a criminal in Samurai Town, which is this weird, that's the name of the town, and he robs a bank with a dude, and then basically, long story short, he gets caught. This local governor / warlord's granddaughter has escaped and gone missing and been captured by these other people, and so he tasked Nick Cage with going and picking her up and bringing her back. But that's not enough. So he makes this suit for him. It's like this leather suit, and it's got explosives at the neck, one on each arm, and two on the balls. And he says, like, if you feel the urge to hit a woman, one of your arm things will explode. If you feel the urge to harass a woman or whatever, one of your balls will explode. And it's bizarre movie, and like an interesting.
Was he a harasser before that? So
no, like you know, like all these movies, there's a flashbacks and stuff where he's actually a decent guy, et cetera. But at one point, one of his ball things does explode, and he like holds up a bloody testicle to the camera, and it's like, oh, Jesus Christ!
Oh, come on!
And it's fascinating to watch. Like, it was, I almost turned it off because it was a cool idea but so poorly executed. The writing was garbage, sound design was not very good, the set design was great, it was very pretty, but man, like at one point I'll drop the sound bite in the editing, but he's like addressing a bunch of people and yelling about his testicles, and it's, man,
Ghostlanders, tomorrow. Getting out of here.
Impossible!
It's impossible.
Impossible? Ha! If you had told me 3 days ago I'd be standing here with one arm and one testicle! Trying to reason with you, bitches! I would have said impossible too.
Yeah, Prisoners of the Ghostland, I don't recommend it, but if you're looking for something to watch and be very confused about, give it a try. It was rated more highly than I would have guessed. It has like a 6.2 on IMDb, I think. But yeah.
Well, it's at the 4.2 now.
Oh, is it? Okay, good. Yeah, that's closer to where it should be. But
I was gonna say for like an actual really good Nicolas Cage movie, Mandy is fucking fantastic.
I've heard.
Fantastic movie, very very interesting, beautifully cinematically, absolutely stunning as well. I'm just gonna say that this will become the Nicolas Cage movie recommending hour. There's one more movie I recommend that's actually also very good but weird. It's called Wild at Heart. It's from 1990, and it has William Dafoe in it as well. It's a very weird movie.
Willem Dafoe is scary. Recommend it.
Yeah,
but his drip is insane. If you've seen him walking around like New York and stuff, people will stop him and just like ask him what he's wearing.
Hold on. William,
leaving Las Vegas with Nick Cage is literally one of the top 10 best movies I've ever watched ever. It's like an absolute masterpiece. It's depressing as fuck, but it's incredible.
There was an AMA with Nick Cage recently on Reddit, and he was asked, like, if you could only keep a couple of your movies, what would they be? And he said, Leaving Las Vegas, obviously, and then Pig was another one. So apparently Pig is very good.
Pig is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I recommended it in another episode. Yeah, we tend to talk about Nick Cage a lot, but Pig is good. Pig is very weird. Pig is not for everyone, but it's really good. It's just, it's a movie that questions You start watching it, and there's this badass guy. So we are so conditioned to thinking that when there's a badass guy that's going for revenge, it's going to start stabbing and shooting and blowing up people, right? But this guy, there's a twist, you'll see. This guy is an expert, but in something else. And then he starts exacting his revenge with the other skill which he has. Not all of us are Rambos. So basically, it's a movie about Rambo, but Rambo can't shoot people. But he can do something else, which I can't, don't want to spoil because that's half of the movie. So yeah, watch it. Watch it. It's quirky. It's good.
Yes,
it's
I'm watching very Pig well tonight. Shot.
Do it. Eat some pig while you watch Pig. Oh. No, don't, because the piggy is very cute. And I really want to stop eating pork because fucking pigs are so fucking cute. I like, feel bad for them. And cows are so fucking, oh my God. Chickens. Ah, fuck them. Fuck them chickens, bro.
Yeah.
Fucking, go, 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 go. Fucking, yeah.
Annoying and loud. Don't care about chickens.
Absolutely. And this is coming from an ex-vegetarian.
Okay, let's wrap up. we have thoroughly left the realm of what this episode is intended to be. I hope you can glean some.
I tried to bring it back, bro. I tried. I tried
I hope you
my
can glean
best.
Something useful out of the shit show that is that is this episode. But hey, let's hope it made some people laugh. I hope you wasted some company time. I hope I made your spreadsheets a bit easier. Or if you're doing surgery and listening to this, I don't know why. You know, actually, in uni, sometimes we'd go to the surgery hall, and then I'd see like old ass surgeons. What's it called? Arguing over whose YouTube playlist gets to play on the fucking computer surgery in the corner. it's hilarious. And some of them, they listen to like weird. I remember it was like an old dignified surgeon. This dude's probably like 60 and above, and he was listening to Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger by Daft Punk while doing a colectomy.
Amazing.
Oh, class.
Yeah. But anyways, by the time you people will be listening to this, we will have hit, I think, officially 1 million listeners. Wow. That is, wow. Yes, wow. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for all the support. Thank you to all the people who listen to us. I still don't understand why people listen to us, but I'm not complaining either way. And of course, a special thanks to the people who support us on Patreon. Of course, without them, this would not be possible at all. So a big, big thanks to all you people. Go join the Patreon, join the subreddit, the Deep Program. There's been some funny memes, and every time we shout it out, like 200 people join. So I'm hoping to get it to a decent size so that I can have we can have like a meme segment or something, a constant flow that we can, you know, laugh at, maybe on like a special segment or something. We'll see. Maybe for the live episodes. But yeah. With all that being said, though, this has been the program. I'm Hakim.
I'm JT.
And I'm Ugopnik, Nick Cage, Objectively Good.
Test the car!